As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Almost 2 months on from that tweet, Jadon Sancho is still out in the cold.
Jadon was performance on the training. We didn't select him. You have to reach a level every day on Manchester United, and we can make choices.
So, are there any signs of reconciliation? And if not, how hard would it be for Manchester United to cash in this January? I'm Ayo Akimulere. Welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast. With us for this, the Athletic's Manchester United writers, Laura Whitwell, and also Carla Anker as well. Now, Laura, let's start with you. Your piece dropped on The Athletic this morning. And actually, it's 2 months to the day since Jadon Sancho played for Manchester United. That game against Nottingham Forest, which Manchester United won 3-2. But where are we with this, with the situation with Jadon Sancho?
Whenever a player has been banished like this, you're sort of always thinking, how has this happened? Who's at fault? Where do you put the blame? Has someone been harsh? Has the player, you know, pushed his luck, basically? I think the general impression from fans is that they think that Ten Hag is right in what he's doing. I think maybe some people think that that's a little bit strict, but that actually Sancho's had enough chances where Ten Hag's given him time to improve his standards or, you know, make a case for himself, and he hasn't fulfilled those requirements. And so this is the next step, naturally. And I think fans can see with their own eyes the performances on the pitch. So there's that element to it where he hasn't exactly enamoured himself to them by, you know, scoring loads of goals and creating loads of assists. I think there's certainly been moments where he's played for Manchester United and he's looked good, and people have wanted to get behind him. I mean, not least, we were talking earlier on the Talk of the Devils podcast about how Jadon Sancho scored against Liverpool in a game for Ten Hag at the start of last season, where it was actually quite a pivotal fixture where Ten Hag was under pressure. So Sancho produced a real brilliant moment of skill in that game, and that felt like, oh, could this be the start of something? And he actually was having a decent run of fixtures at that point. But it's then come again to this stage where clearly Ten Hag feels he's not doing enough in training, and we've got the details exactly as to the kind of catalyst for this particular issue. Although there has been lingering aspects to Sancho's performances that Ten Hag wasn't happy with in the piece. Yeah, ultimately people are thinking, well, listen, you've had your chance, and probably it's for the best if you end up leaving.
I love how you've managed to plug Talk of the Devils through that conversation.
Sorry, am I allowed to do that?
Nah, you can do that. Of course you can, man. All good. I love it. Just interlinked, as I like to say. Now, Carl, let's talk about that tweet. What was it? 7 weeks or so ago? And I know we've spoken about Jadon Sancho on this podcast before, but Adam Crafton sort of succinctly put it in these words. He said he just needs to grow up. Now, we've had time for this to breathe a little. What are your thoughts on it? Was it a mistake to publicly criticise the manager in such a way?
It was an unforced error. And as Laurie's alluded to, it really felt as if Sancho overplayed his hand, shall we say. If this is the Jadon Sancho that had got 10 goals and 10 assists last season and was really pushing to be in the starting lineup, then I think Manchester United fans would have more to say about this situation. However, what's also been quite disappointing is that since Jadon Sancho gave out that tweet, and, you know, something I always come back to is in the second section of that tweet, in that statement, Sancho says he will do whatever is possible to fight for that shirt. And it just hasn't come across that way. It seems very, very clear that if Jadon Sancho wants to fight for the Manchester United shirt, he has to walk into Erik ten Hag's office and say, I'm sorry, can we restart? And okay, maybe Jadon Sancho is not going to be the player he was at Borussia Dortmund and at Manchester United. But nothing improves at Manchester United for Jadon Sancho until he says sorry. And the longer and the more time has passed, the more time you've got to point out, actually, no, he's not fighting for the shirt. He's not doing the thing that he said he was going to do. Hence the, just grow up.
Mm. You get a sense that, like, obviously Ten Hag wants intensity from his players, right? You want to be operating at that top level if Manchester United is trying to get to where it's been historically, right? And from your perspective, Laurie, can we just get a sense of just how fraught this relationship is? Because as Carl alluded to, he wants to fight for that shirt, but he's still not playing for Manchester United. He's still not stepping up on the pitch. Clearly, something's gone amiss here.
It has to be pride for me. I think whilst he might want that, his pride won't allow him at the moment, it seems, to apologise, because then I think he would feel diminished by that. But on the other side, Erik ten Hag is not going to back down because, you know, he's the boss of Manchester United. He came in with issues over discipline, standards, you know, he's referenced those publicly. And he feels that if he relented in this situation now, his authority would take a hit. And he just doesn't see that as a possibility. So, and I don't think he wants to anyway. I think he kind of feels like it's the right thing to do, to have people training at an intensity that is such a level that when they go into the games are actually, you know, a bit easier maybe, or, you know, they can kind of do it and it's not a problem. And so if you've got, you know, people that perhaps are, you know, kind of not doing what he wants in training, and he's, you know, he's quite specific about this, and he's gone through with Sancho in a video session after the dust has settled, after a week or so after the social media post, to kind of explain this is why, you know. So he's gone the education route in my eyes there. He's not just kind of hit him with the stick and gone, right, you're out, outrageous social media post. He's tried to kind of bring him in, but the essence of it is that you do need to apologise for this social media post, because people would say, well, why has Ten Hag even gone public? And there's a sense some people have, even within the club, are kind of questioning, could he have handled that differently? But the question was, and I was there in the press conference at the time, it was, you know, why is Jadon Sancho and Scott McTominay out? McTominay illness, and then Sancho, he was like, well, he wasn't at the levels in training. It was enough, obviously. So he knows what he's doing. He's made it public. He clearly went into that situation thinking, I'm not going to sugarcoat this if I'm asked about it. But it wasn't like he kind of did a hit job on Sancho and kind of went into detail about what was wrong. He kind of just made it quite simple. And that, to me, is a message to Sancho. You know, if he's had these conversations behind the scenes, he also feels like now, actually, okay, I need to make it public so that people can understand why he's not in the team. And generally, I don't think Ten Hag does actually, he's pretty honest with most of what he says. I mean, I know managers can have, you know, flirtations with the truth at different points. I know Carl sort of, you know, squinting a little bit. And I accept your point, Carl. There's definitely a manager's license.
He doesn't tell fibs, but he doesn't tell fibs. He does like to omit.
Yeah, okay.
And I think it was interesting that he didn't omit here with Sancho. I was in the same press conference as you, and he could have very easily said illness, which has become sort of Ten Hag's catch-all term for loads of injuries that he doesn't want to elaborate into. So it was pointed. It was Ten Hag very much going, I've tried the carrot with this player, let me try the stick. And I mean, it's remarkable that we're still talking about this and not so much talking about the fact that Manchester United came very close to beating Arsenal and lost 3-1. That statement became the story.
Because it is an unusual thing, isn't it, for a manager to criticise a player in that way, I think. You know, particularly when it's a player that people think, you know, he's kind of done it with Garnacho previously as a young player. It was him that revealed about Marcus Rashford being late for a team meeting, and that's why he was out of the team. And then I know Rashford elaborated after the game. So he has had these moments where he's just, I guess, just pushing the players. But then obviously Sancho's reaction is just way beyond, I think, what anyone expected. I think maybe we thought maybe Sancho could snap back a little bit, but not to that degree where he's saying it's completely untrue. He's saying he's a scapegoat, and he's saying there's other reasons for him not being selected, which is quite serious stuff, this. So I can see why Ten Hag is absolutely saying that you cannot come back into my team or even into the first team picture without acknowledging that that was wrong and saying sorry, and that we can communicate that to the fans so that they understand the situation. But then I even wonder if that would be enough, you know, because at this point it's almost like a performative thing now. I don't know, would Sancho really mean it? That's sort of one of the questions that's been asked.
It feels very schoolboy. I was a young terror, eh? When I was 14, 15.
Were you, Carl?
Yeah, a little bit.
Tell us more about this.
Nah, it's another podcast for another time. there were three or four times where I'd go to a teacher what I thought of them, and then a teacher would go, "You have to apologize." And I'm like, "No, I'm not going to apologize." And similarly, I'd be detention until eventually someone went, "Look, you'll be in detention all year unless you say sorry." And I was like, "Fine, I'll say sorry."
But Carl, you're a schoolboy, not a professional footballer on 200 grand a week. Like, it's very different situation. He's a professional, right?
Jadon Sancho is 23 years of age. His time at Dortmund, statistically, he was one of the most productive goal scorers and goal creators in Europe's top five leagues. He was phenomenal playing on the right-hand side. In part, massively, because Borussia Dortmund had overlapping right-backs in Hakimi and then eventually Thomas Meunier. He ends up at Manchester United and his right-back is Aaron Wan-Bissaka, which is a dramatically different playing circumstance. And he, you know, there was a big song and dance about him arriving. It turns out he's got ear infection, so he doesn't really play too much of pre-season. But there's loads of hype. There's loads of excitement. Everyone's really excited. He's on the bench in the opening game against Leeds. United win that game. They absolutely blow Leeds away. Sancho plays for a couple of minutes. And you're all thinking, this is amazing. This United team under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to go up and up and up and up and up. And then just before that transfer window closes, Cristiano Ronaldo turns up and things change. The setup of that front three changes. Ronaldo gets the number 7 shirt. Sancho, who's wearing 25, 2 plus 5, is now going, hang on, wait. So I could have got the 7 shirt instead. It does feel really juvenile that, you know, for some reason, this 23-year-old who was touted as one of the best, most mature players in Europe's top five leagues is, for some reason, that he doesn't want to elaborate, but he probably should elaborate, is acting like a 14-year-old.
Football is bigger and more complicated than ever before. Just ask VAR.
Check complete. It's fine. Perfect. Yeah.
So the Daily Football Briefing is here to help, whether it's the World Cup.
It's a kind of face-saving, everyone's happy, no one's a loser.
Lionel Messi.
As they say, he completed football.
Or Manchester United.
I mean, the performances all season have been questionable.
That are making you quizzical. The Daily Football Briefing has all the answers you need for every football story that matters, and it does exactly what the name suggests. It's daily, it's brief, and it's all about football. The Daily Football Briefing from The Athletic, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to the Athletic Football Podcast with Ayo Akinwolere.
Look who it is! It's Jadon Sancho for Dortmund, and it just gets better and better. Sancho fresh on and gets himself on the score sheet.
Have United given him, you know, the tools to succeed? We look at his time at Dortmund. Primarily played on the left wing, right? Like, and
so this is really interesting. United want to buy him before 2021. So this is, and Laurie wrote an amazing piece about this, about how Dortmund apparently had a few, Laurie, was 125
million? 120 million, yeah, was what they were after. I think that was euros, to be fair, but
sorry.
Yeah, it was a lot of money. At the time, you know, United said no to it, and it was a whole summer thing, wasn't it? Like a really prolonged period. Ahmad came in later that summer, you know, as the kind of right winger. You know, we're still sort of waiting for that one to develop into something first team. But yeah, then the next summer when United actually got him, it was seen as, okay, they've actually got a good deal for this guy that was, as you say, Carl, his numbers were astonishing. There were also issues off the pitch that United have encountered. So the timekeeping, the oversleeping, you know, but they basically had people that would make sure that he was on time or turning up. It's how much of that is just him not appreciating the seriousness of just being on time so that you have respect for your teammates and your management staff. How much of it is not having that care? You know, where do you draw the line there, I suppose?
Yeah, but my thing is, right, if you're going to spend that kind of money on a player, surely you're thinking how this player is going to be integrated into the squad, right, based on what you've seen at Dortmund, for instance. And I've seen him play in different positions. You've seen that false nine position for Manchester United. I mean, I'm just thinking, and I'm trying to play devil's advocate here. Are they using this player to his effectiveness, if that's even a word, at Manchester United?
If United had paid the 120 million euros to pick up Sancho in the summer of 2020, Jadon Sancho was a right winger at that point in time. If he arrived then, I'm pretty sure Sancho would have been quite happy to play on the right-hand side. And the question there would have been, you probably need to drop Wan-Bissaka and you probably need to play Dalot. I think that extra season he has in Dortmund, he plays a lot. He plays more or less close to half of the season on the left. So he changes the player in his final season at Dortmund and in his first season at Manchester United, because Marcus Rashford is not having a good season at all, and Anthony Elanga is doing what Ralph Rangnick wants to say, and also because Dalot and Wan-Bissaka are not the overlapping right backs, but Solskjaer, Carrick and Rangnick go, I've got Luke Shaw, they all move Sancho to the left. That plan worked for a little bit, and then Luke Shaw got injured for 3 months, and then I had to watch Alex Telles try and overlap Sancho, and it was horrific. But I think this became a big thing of the things that helped make Sancho very good in Germany were not there at Manchester United in a tactical sense. He needs an overlapping right back, because the big misdirect we will have with Jadon Sancho is he's not quick. He is not an explosively quick run from point A to point B.
You've said this before, and that really surprised me, Carl. Like, I just naturally think he's rapid and he just skips past players. And actually, yeah, I mean, I don't know the stats particularly for his speed, or if he's one of the slowest or fastest at Manchester United, but yeah, it really surprised me.
He's not got that explosive half burst over 10, 15 yards. So, I was there in the Euros. I went to Rome. I was talking to Archie Tupp, who is a fantastic Bundesliga correspondent. And he said, he described Sancho as a half-space boy, right? You put him in that gap between the centre-back and the full-back, and you let him dribble, and he's going to cause loads of damage. If you give him loads of runners, and the way he gets into half-space is your full-back overlaps, and he cuts inside, and then he sizes your man up, and then he goes, I'm going to do this and this and this. The speed comes from his speed of thought, not from his speed of body. Fine. That's cool in the Bundesliga, especially in a Bundesliga where there's loads of space open on transition and everyone wants to defend, you know, 4-2-3-1 mid blocks, and you're going up and down and counter-attacking. And you saw in that first season at Manchester United, I mean Jadon Sancho was playing against Burnley and going, what is this? Why are there five men behind the ball at all points in time? I can't break this down. Can someone help me? And it was no coincidence in his first season, his best game happened against Southampton under Ralf Hasenhüttl, a team that plays like a German team, because Hasenhüttl was in the Bundesliga. He was like, oh, this is easy. So those are the tactical issues that were there. Then you get to the problem of, because Sancho is not quick, and because his effectiveness was like dramatically limited in the Premier League, you get to a point of going, should I build my entire attack around Sancho? And the answer is probably not, because he's not as quick as Marcus Rashford, so he's not going to get that left-hand side space. United have not bought an overlapping right-back. They probably could have.
Well, this is it, Carl. You're making me remember Kieran Trippier was the guy that they were in that same era. I mean, whatever happened to him? Is he all right at the moment? Is he doing okay?
He's doing all right. he lost against a certain German team on the week. So,
But he loves
so
to
you've
overlap.
Got that as well.
Oh, imagine.
So you got that as well. So that was a problem. I remember last season, Sancho had a particularly poor game against Omonia Nicosia. This is Europa League group game. This is against the Cypriot champions. And okay, maybe Jadon Sancho isn't fast enough to get past a Kieran Trippier, to get past a Kyle Walker, to get past a Reece James. But he should be fast enough and confident enough to try and outstrip the starting right back or the starting fullback on the Cypriot champions. And I mean this with a little bit of disrespect.
Disrespect intended.
Disrespect intended. Sancho should have been looking at those Europa League group games and going, I'm skidding everyone. And he just didn't. And this I remember this being the real sort of eyebrow-raising moment for United fans, going, if he's not trying to take on fullbacks here in the Europa League group stage, is he ever going to make it in the Premier League? I wrote a piece saying, okay, if he's not going to be on the wide positions, then he can do the other position, which is as the number 10, which he did play for Dortmund sometime. And this is, I think, why Ten Hag spent this preseason playing Sancho in central positions as the 10, as the false nine guy. If you're not quick enough out wide, I'll try in the middle. But Sancho is not a productive player in the same way as Bruno Fernandes. So you have that problem. He's not as quick as Rashford, so he can't get the left-hand side. There's no overlapping right-back, so he can't have the right. He's not as ridiculously creative as Bruno Fernandes, so he's not going to get the 10. So even if Sancho does apologise and gets brought back in the fold, where does he play?
Carl, just on that as well, you're saying all this. I'm here on the layman, and I'm not a football scout in any way, shape or form. Why did Manchester United buy him?
Because, honestly, he wasn't like this in Dortmund.
It's interesting on that point, Carl, just because Erik ten Hag says, when we asked him about this in San Diego, he said, actually, if you looked at his games, this is kind of how he was playing for Dortmund. And now I would take, I kind of agree with you. I don't think he was, because I think he had more kind of confidence to try things. And as you say, that the relationships were there. But it's interesting that ten Hag sort of views that as, well, actually, I saw quite a lot of Bundesliga games, and this is kind of what I expected from Sancho.
In the central positions, yes. I think the trajectory of Sancho at United, first you have he really needs the overlapping right back. Then you have he needs Luke Shaw back if he wants to play on the left. Then you have I could probably do with a striker like Haaland up top to make it work. And then you have the point of, I've made all of these things about what he needs. At some point, he does need to just be better himself. And the problem is, there is no Jadon Sancho game in a Manchester United shirt. That he's got a goal, he's got some moments, but I don't think for a player who's cost £73 million, he's not pulled up any trees. Which again, the layman question of, how did we get this so wrong? To which I think there's probably a lot of people in scouting and analysis departments going, right, is the Bundesliga tax real?
So Laurie, this leads me nicely into this really. Like, I mean, is this something that Ten Hag has created or inherited fundamentally? And just how bad is it at this moment in time? Because you've written about it. Where is he in Manchester United? Who is he training with? Who is he seeing day to day? You know, just go back to the David Beckham documentary when Fabio Capello got him to play him, away from the first team. Are we at that situation?
This does happen, and it is, I think all elite managers feel, or just instinctively want to, just know that they have to stamp their authority. I mean, Pep Guardiola, you know, he publicly criticised Calvin Phillips for being overweight, and that happens, and then people move on. But because City are winning, it's a different context. It kind of feels more pressurised because United are in a turbulent position, and you know, people have questioned Ten Hag at different moments. But I think all managers of a certain level feel like they need to make sure that they flex their muscles and the players are under their sort of guidance and instruction. I do think it's partly, you know, something that he inherited, you know, because as Carl's touched on, it wasn't like Sancho was in a position going great guns. Ten Hag comes in with a new way of thinking and it changes. This has been, you know, where does he play and how does he play has been a struggle for Solskjaer, for Ranić, and now for Erik ten Hag. It's interesting, it's kind of ironic when you think about the Ronaldo aspect. That's a really crucial element, you know, him coming in, and there's certainly been, I think, there was a difference of opinions between them on certain aspects, which is kind of ironic because Ronaldo was the first person that ten Hag got rid of for disrupting his authority, and now Sancho's the next one. But actually Ronaldo also thought that Sancho probably should be doing more in training. You know, I think that's one of the things that Ronaldo was kind of referencing when he spoke about, you know, the youngsters these days don't do it like I used to do it, etc.
I remember when I was 18, 19, 20, I'm always looked to see the best players, Van Nistelrooy, Ferdinand, Roy Keane, Giggs. This is why I have the successful that I have and longevity, because I take care of my body, my mentality, my head. Because I see these guys and I learn from them.
As for what he's up to at the moment, yeah, I mean, he is training at Carrington. I think sometimes it's solo, sometimes it's with other academy players. He's getting changed in the academy facilities. I mean, it's quite a bleak experience when you think about the fact that he has to lock the dressing room door when he's getting changed so that underage players don't accidentally come in, you know, for safeguarding issues. I mean, it's kind of, it's pretty stark. I say we've had this story before, haven't we, where managers are kind of pushing players to, you know, to breaking point almost. But then again, he seems like he is, you know, resolute in his stance, and he's doing other things outside the pitch that we can all see in terms of the computer games, in terms of enjoying himself over in New York or a nightclub in London, which, you know, is, again, fine. You know, people are allowed a private life, but that's stuff that I don't think Ten Hag would look at and go, okay, this is a guy that actually really wants to get back in my team and, you know, I should actually give a bit more leeway to.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You're listening to the Athletic Football Podcast with Ayo Akinwolera.
It feels like Ten Hag has actually, as a manager, as firm as he has been, Carl, has gone, okay, maybe things aren't the way they need to be. We talk about sending him to the Netherlands to do some training or some work. Off you go, do your little thing, come back with a much more professional attitude. And is that bed of childishness? I don't know. I'm just reading into this. I'm not in Manchester United. It feels like there's that bed of childishness that's just impetulant, maybe.
I think the sad thing is they're probably both right, or they probably both think they are right. So Ten Hag is probably looking at Sancho going, why are you behaving this way? I've done everything for you. I've done as much as I can for you. I've tried moving you in the middle. I've given you games on the left. I've given you games at false nine. I've showed you video clips of exactly what you need to do. Why do you not understand that you need to turn up on time and you need to be doing this in training? Like, why are you not getting it? And if you're Jadon Sancho, Sancho's probably looking at Ten Hag going, why do you not get it? I'm trying my best. Okay, I'm late maybe this or much times, but I'm really trying. Like, why do you keep playing Antony ahead of me? Antony's not playing that good either. Why is Antony getting all this protection, whereas I'm getting slated here? Why did you spend all this money on a player who can only really use his left foot? And there really should be someone in the middle resolving that. And, you know, in your piece, Laurie, you're saying that person is John Murr.
He would be, but he's tried to mediate. I mean, I agree with you. I think actually, you know, United at this point, there should be someone, you know, getting involved and trying again to resolve it. That person probably would be John Murta. Whether they're already, I mean, they are already thinking about January, though. They're already thinking about a potential exit, but that's going to be easier said than done just because of his wages and the fact that people are witnessing this, you know, European, it's not been a secret, this kind of thing. So people are well aware of the difficulties.
Even so, should it not be your responsibility to go, let's get him in, get him to play a handful of games, you know, 30 minutes, 10 minutes, so he can at least show the world that he can play football from January 1st.
Yeah, the issue is there, though, that he can't possibly, you know, tell a manager what to do. Ten Hag, you know, he's got a lot of authority at the club as it is, but I think even if he didn't, I don't think a football director should ever be saying, I mean, maybe those kind of conversations do happen from time to time. I certainly know, you know, under Sir Alex Ferguson, for example, he would play a player just to give them some minutes in, you know, the Carling Cup or whatever it was.
Well, that definitely brings us to that point then, if there were some suitors. I mean, I don't want to just say Saudi Arabia because I just feel like that's such a cop-out. Saudi Arabia is on that much money, send him there. Like, you know.
That's the reality, though. That's what United, you know, felt like. You know, particularly because their transfer window was open for longer. So after Jane Sancho's social media post that came out, Saudi Arabia was the only window open, really. I mean, there was the Turkish one, I think, as well. So they were seen as the only viable option. I know what you're saying. It feels like an unimaginative solution to this situation. But because of his wages, maybe United could then take a hit on what they accept from another club, just so that Sancho can get some minutes. And as Carl's touched on, maybe if he can play elsewhere, then that reminds people that actually this is a kid who's got a lot of talent and maybe that retains some of the value for then in the summer being able to sell him. Because I don't see how Sancho plays for Ten Hag again now. I know at the time we kind of discussed this, didn't we, Carl, about can you see a solution? And at that point there was some mediation going on and it sort of felt like both parties were hopeful, at least, if not expectant, that something could happen. But I think it's become clear that both are entrenched in their positions.
Did United cancel his contract? It screams of Aubameyang, it screams of Ozil, but they were at the back end of their careers. You've still got a really young lad here. Is it even financially worth United's time to cancel his contract?
I wouldn't say so. Sancho's contract runs until 2025, if memory serves, and his wages are thought to be north of £200,000 a week, which is sizable. Arsenal managed to move on Mesut Ozil when he was on 350, I believe, and Oba was on north of £200,000 a week as well. And they ended his contract early, but those were a bit closer along, I think.
2026 plus one. That is a hefty contract. So, yeah, I don't think anyone's thinking of that avenue. I think they're just, yeah, trying to see what solution can be found. But, you know, it takes Sancho to agree. You know, he's obviously shown that he won't be easily led to a situation to do something if he doesn't want to. That's absolutely fine. It's his career, it's his life. So that's why I think the Saudi Arabian links were kind of, he just wasn't interested in the summer. Whether that changes in January, I don't know. But I think that's, you know, just United will probably start to ask questions in, you know, as we get closer to the window of clubs that might, and you know, situations change, don't they? You know, somebody gets injured, then actually Sancho looks like a good solution to a short-term problem. But yeah, as it stands, it feels like it's going to be a difficult situation to resolve that one.
What football club wants to take on a player who is now widely reported has trouble with timekeeping and was reluctant to apologise to a football manager? You need a club that is perhaps outside the Champions League places going, Sancho could be our best attacker and we could build our entire attack around him and that might be worth it. Or a club that's trying to make a statement on a grand stage, i.e. somewhere in Saudi Arabia or somewhere in Turkey or somewhere in another nation that's trying to make a splash.
From a football fan perspective, I don't know, like you see a young player who looks attractive on the eye, especially when he played for Dortmund. And we are now in this really weird situation and also playing for one of the biggest clubs in the world, right? You know, and I look at, you know, what Ange Postecoglou was saying, and I'm paraphrasing what he said in terms of when he came to Tottenham, he just wanted to remind these players that they are lucky. They are lucky to be doing something like this. It's not a day job where you're going to the bank and, like, you know, checking in 9 to 5. You're playing your boyhood dream. Like, you're doing something like this in front of loads of people. It's basically what you've dreamt of doing since you were a kid. And now we're at this situation now, and it's just a bit sour.
It's a tragedy. I hear that statement a lot of Sancho's being paid this much amount of money to play football. Why on earth is he not more grateful? And I'm looking at the situation going, Sancho is probably thinking that right now. We've all, you know, in our professional lives or in personal lives, probably had a moment where we are not doing what we think we should be doing, right? And I've had this where I went into a certain environment and I just couldn't reconcile things with myself and I couldn't perform to levels I want. And I'm just in the bathroom staring at myself in the mirror and I'm calling myself all sorts of terrible things and saying, why can't you behave? Why can't you get your act together? And I'm sure Sancho's probably had that conversation with himself right now. And it's a real shame that he cannot, for one reason or another, be the football player he used to be at Manchester United. And the bit in that statement that really gets to me is he says, I believe there are other reasons for this matter that I won't go into. And I want him to. I'm sure one day we'll get Jadon Sancho's full side of the story about what happened. But also, you know, Sancho probably needs to come to terms with what happened. And I don't think that's going to happen here. I think the current environment at Manchester United is not the most productive for him. You know, Laurie said he's having to lock the door in the changing room in the academy centre. You do that sort of thing going, how did I get here? There's a segment in there about what's happening when Sancho needs to get lunch and how he can't go into the main building when the first team is there. I'm sure there's probably two or three moments where he probably went, what am I doing? Or he's talking to some of his team friends in the first team and they've gone, so are you going to join us anytime soon? And he's probably gone, we'll see. Right? Sancho's asking himself these questions. Like, have I made the right decision coming to United? Did I make the right decision doing what I did with Eric? Did I make the right decision not apologising? And the fact that he's still here is sad. If he still can't reconcile things within himself and do something, that should be treated with a sadness and hopefully, eventually, some kindness down the road, because it looks as if he really needs an arm around the shoulder and a, look, mate, we'll get to where you need to be eventually.
He's a complex character, I think. You know, you've heard different stories of him being kind of reluctant to do media interviews and put himself out there. But then when he does do an interview, like he did away at Leicester, he'd scored the winning goal at the King Power Stadium last season. He was very polite, you know, shook journalists' hand, gave interesting answers. And to all accounts, that's what he's been like with the academy players that he's mixed with during this exile. You know, he's kind of answered their questions. He watched an under-18s game whilst United were away in Bayern Munich. So that contrast, as Carl's touched on there, must be going through his mind. I could be playing in the Champions League tonight and actually, you know, I'm kind of watching under-18s game, which I suppose, you know, is quite nice as well. You know, he's watching the next generation come through. He answered their questions afterwards. So he must be a stubborn character in some regards, but then also a softer individual in other aspects. So it's kind of difficult to pinpoint exactly what the nub of it is. But I agree with Carl. I think clearly he must be sort of trying to ask himself these questions.
Okay, fantastic. Let's leave it there, gents. Carl, Laurie, appreciate your time. And do not forget, you can sign up to The Athletic today to read the Jadon Sancho article in full right now for just $1.99 a month for 12 months at theathletic.com/footballpod. And actually, while you're there, leave us a quick review and rating if you've been enjoying the podcast. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to The Athletic Football Podcast. The producers were Adonis Pratsides and Guy Clark, with additional production by Mike Stavro and Jay Beale. The executive producer was AD Moorhead. To listen to other great Athletic football podcasts for free, search for The Athletic on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, and head to theathletic.com/footballpod for the very latest subscription offers. The Athletic Football Podcast is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.